All right. We are on. Welcome to Presidio Bitcoin Jam.
We're live.
Live.
Nothing to talk about this week.
Nothing at all. Nothing happened this week. We were, you know, all just vibing and chilling and, you know, the AIs have taken over.
Yeah.
So.
Vibes are strong.
Yeah. Well, it was fun being back here. Steve and I got to do a mountain bike session.
Oh, this morning?
No, on Tuesday.
Tuesday.
And then he came in and PR'd every segment of the whole thing, like the next day or 2 days, 2 days later.
I had to show off. it was actually weather related. It was weather because on Tuesday it was like a beautiful summer day in the Midwest.
Yeah, yeah.
It felt like that.
It was just beautiful.
So we were just out there maximizing the amount of time. And then yesterday was the exact opposite.
Yeah.
Blustering winds, cloudy, gloomy.
Sometimes
wet,
that
muddy.
Hard edge is what gets you, you know.
So I'm just like, I'll
the motivation.
Get this over with.
I thought maybe channeling some of the frustration from March Madness in a very positive direction, you know, just PR.
I'm still not over that loss.
I really am not over that loss.
Me neither. But.
And then Max and I got a sauna session in, which was good. But I was kind of, it was my second sauna session of the day. And I just, I like got dizzy after like the first session. So we didn't get to do kind of the dip and back and forth.
The fun deal.
Thanks.
To be fair, that sauna is also extremely hot. So folks ever visit San Francisco and they want to do a really, really hot sauna and then swim in the bay, I got you.
And if you do visit San Francisco, you've got to come by Presidio Bitcoin because what I've just been bumping into people in the halls and in in the lunch table, and just like Alex and I went to lunch together and had a chat. D++ and I were vibe coding for kind of hackathon prep stuff. She had not really played with tools. I had played with the tools, but didn't get the lightning stuff working. Then we sat down together and kind of did, it was a little bit of like a toy situation, but we got it working end to end just by sitting there at the lunch table. So when you come here, great things happen, right? Like there's people around, there's just little things you don't expect to happen, bump into. I bumped into Max in the other Max,
other.
Max Fang, in the lunchroom, the cafeteria kitchen thing. And he was telling me all about Lexi. So I kind of really started to understand Lexi. I got signed up. I was on non-custodial Lightning wallet within like 30 seconds of starting. It's so easy. I was super impressed by that. And then I was like, hey, like, D and I are over here trying to get this vibe coding with Lightning thing to work. And I was like, what if we, you know, what if we, could we like use Lexi as our kind of non-custodial Lightning solution so we don't have to think about payments, it just works. And then he's like, well, I don't know, like, let's see. And then next day he comes back and he's like, oh, here we go. We've got an SDK wrapper that's going to make it all easy. So the things that we wouldn't have even expected or we wouldn't have planned these meetings, these little bumping into each other just really helps just, I think, move everything forward.
I would say for me, the last 2 weeks at Presidio Bitcoin, it's been two of the most fertile sort of idea generating weeks I've ever had. I also, obviously, you know, with you being here every day this week, I've got a lot of new ideas. We've been talking about some of the stuff with hardware and energy, which is my new obsession, which will hopefully
be a full... It's been your obsession for a long time.
I would say it's a new...
Rekindled.
It's a new re-obsession. I have two or three different essays that are cooking right now as we speak, and one of them is going to be on, a lot about how solar is eating the world. But that's another conversation topic. I had conversations with Jesse and some of their guys around the lab thinking about confidential compute and the limits of what that could take, and it was just blowing my fucking mind. Presidio Bitcoin right now is doing everything we hope for and then like, and then some.
And we did a live stream to the old Noster channel that we've been doing for years.
Noster News.
So yeah, Noster News. We kind of did it right here yesterday afternoon. And so if anybody, and we invited people to come see this and see what we're doing here at noon on Fridays, noon Pacific Fridays. So I just want to say like, hey, welcome. If anybody did decide to join us and we can watch in the chat. We've got a lot of people now who were from the Noster News days who may come over here. We're going to get this thing out on Noster. It's not just going to be YouTube.
That's right.
We're going to get
Let's
it out.
Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
About our our journey in producing a show.
Oh, boy.
And we've made a lot of improvements, and we have a lot of improvements in store as well.
Indeed.
So let's just talk about
All
some
right.
of that.
Yeah. Kick it off.
Kick it off, Steve.
So one... We're in a new seating configuration.
Love it.
This old man had like back pains based on how we were seating before. So thanks for accommodating
that.
I guess
too many pull-ups.
too jacked. It's already,
not only is it more comfortable though, I think this feels like just three guys sitting around a table chatting with each other. So hopefully we feel more comfortable.
Yeah.
So that's good.
And hopefully people can hear me because I know the mic was a huge issue. By the way, if there's a live chat, if we can see, if you can hear me, please let me know, because that was a huge issue we're trying to solve.
And we got our first comment already, is excited for Noster Native. So anybody who thinks that this shouldn't be on Noster, I don't know if anybody's advocating for it to not be on Noster, but you're wrong. It should be on Noster.
Yeah. So we're, well, let's talk about, yeah, how are we making this more available to people? So yeah. It's obviously a live show. Anyone watching now knows that. But then we post it on YouTube after the show as well. So it's available. But we're also, we now have an RSS feed, and it's available in popular podcast platforms like Apple and Spotify. Yep. So if you prefer to consume it through podcasts and just listen to audio, awesome. It's available now. And we did a dozen or more shows starting in November before we officially launched PBJ. And that's now available. It's soon going to be available. all those old episodes.
And it was just the BJ.
In the,
Come on, TK.
In podcast form. So look, everyone should look forward for that too.
Yeah. And we should have Value for Value up as well soon.
Yep.
And Zap.Op stream as well. So yep. We know we need that. It's coming.
And this is a no ads production. We're never doing ads, right? Yeah. So if
we didn't say that.
Did we? Oh, okay. Sorry.
Well, we are not.
We reserved the right to do it.
I like optionality.
Okay. So, optionality, but okay. At least some people here really, really don't like ads.
We don't do ads today. We may never do ads. Making money is not like the primary goal of the show. It's just like the three of us chatting about stuff we care about, and hopefully people gain value out of that. But we have the option in the future, whether it be through Value for Value or ads or whatever, if there's a way to help fund the Presidio Bitcoin,
yep.
We'll keep that option available.
Yeah, of course. And my hope is maybe not just Value for Value, but having micropayments with podcasts. That's just the first iteration. There may be other ways we can monetize. I'm absolutely not anti-monetization, just crappy ads. And by the way, it's like every podcast that got big, and it was just like, it was so, there was like a string. I'm not going to name names, but you probably know.
The legends at Iron?
Oh, no. Maybe for years, where it's like, whenever they
had it, I love that. I love that pod.
That's the anti-signal. Whenever you hear there's an ad for a company, you know you're going to get run in the next 6 months. Like, oh, BlockFi? Like, run. Whatever. So we'll do our best to make sure that never happens, but...
Anyway, so you were telling us about other improvements.
Oh, what? Well, I mean, one thing. So we have this incredible view out our window. It's a beautiful day right now, partly cloudy, but mostly a blue sky. And I think the way it's coming through for folks watching this is it looks like a gloomy gray sky. Trust me, that's not reality.
It's gorgeous.
And we can see the Golden Gate Bridge really well. So we're looking at different treatments we can do to the window, alter the lighting, to hopefully show the view we see so the audience can see it as well.
Yeah, we're hoping we'll have some makeup done for next week as well. But
I got my hair did.
We got to keep makeup free. That's going too far.
All right, I'm a fan. Keep it natural.
Yeah.
So speaking of keeping it natural and keeping it unnatural, vibe coding. I know I bring this up every week.
You're a professional.
I'm a professional.
Here wanted a Bitcoin show and all you wanted to have was
it's vibe coding,
but it turns out.
Well, yeah, I think I even wrote a thing, I don't know, 6 or 9 months ago, like, let AI be AI, let Bitcoin be Bitcoin, and let them converge when they converge. And I was kind of just like, peace, you don't have to like jam these things into each other. But now everywhere I look, I'm like, okay, you can make things, and then you get stuck if you want to do payments, and you get stuck if you want to do like identity stuff, right? Because there's not good ways to do that. So Max told me, I don't know if you saw this, but I guess Karpathy just dropped a tweet last night or so.
Yeah, so it was very interesting to me. So Karpathy, very popular around the Bay Area, you know, longtime AI engineer.
He's the origination of the term vibe coding.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he was the one who made it.
Oh.
He wrote a tweet about it, like, I don't know, a couple of months ago.
And so apparently a memetic master as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But basically he dropped a tweet last night, which it's very interesting because he was like, look, vibe coding, it's great, but like, it's much harder. Like, if you want to just do like a cool demo, it's like one shot, that's super easy. But if you actually want something that actually works, that people can use, that you could make money from, that people could actually log into, it's a giant pain in the ass. And the biggest pain in the ass is like, you have all of these different components that it's not easy to plug things together yet. So I need a database, I need authentication. He made a long list of like 10 to 12 things that he wanted to see in there. And interestingly, two of them really boil down to identity and payments. And so his whole point was, look, you have all of these beautiful pieces, you have the models to do all of the vibe coding. If someone were to step forward and build an environment where you could just plug and play with the different elements, like, hey, I need to add to this an identity system. Here's like five like OAuth type things that just work, or payments that just work. Amazing. In response to that tweet, Amjad, who is obviously the CEO and founder of Replit, also interestingly a longtime well-known Bitcoiner, he came back with a response and was like, "Yo, Replit agents got you. We do all of these things," except he left out two. One was identity, and he said auth coming soon, and then he just completely ignored payments. And so I sort of tongue in cheek just retweeted that right now, tagged you guys. Yeah. My homie Jordy, who's working on the L4-2 protocol, Roast Beef, some other guys that are working on this in the Nostraland. But like, I think the big opportunity that is clearly staring people in the face is if there's a way to like build the environment, and maybe this is something like Goose or something like Cursor or whatever, but where people can just plug and play the modules they need. Obviously, there's always going to be room for things like using X or Google or whatever for auth and traditional Stripe payments. But there's also, I think, a huge area of opportunity for the open version of that right now, which is what you were pumping yesterday on Nostr.
What the open version of?
Well, the open version of like, I want to build a code, like I need a coding environment where I want to ship apps, and I want the option for that identity to be an open version of identity that's not controlled and potentially rate limited by X, and payments that's also open that anyone anywhere in the world could use. It's not controlled by whatever, Stripe or something like that, that allows for things like micropayments. And it was interesting because there was this, you know, a lot of Nostr people who I don't think had really played with vibe coding yet. I think that was good that you pushed that on our show yesterday. Carnage, who's a designer first and foremost, he basically came up and said—
Perfect example, yeah.
Yeah, he basically was like, I have been vibe coding, but I still can't get all the little elements to work. Like the Nostr development kit's not quite there. I can't get identity and payments quite to work. So it seems like we're just at the precipice of that being a big deal.
And I think part of the thing we were doing here, like with D++ and stuff, is we were trying to figure out how do you help, like if we're going to do this hackathon in May, which we are, we're going to do this hackathon in May.
That's right.
When we do this hackathon in May, we've got to make it easy for people to like not care about payments,
right,
and just care about the app they want to build and then drop payments in. And right now you can't do that. Like it's impossible. You have to hack your way through and figure out how to do it. So all of the hate that vibe coding gets, and I understand like people are like, oh, it's like a toy. It doesn't really replace, like that's fine piece, but it does do some really amazing things. But it's not easy to get Lightning done fast. So I think we need to get that solved. But I also realize part of what I think is maybe holding Nostr back in some ways is that everybody's building social media apps and we don't have people just like inventing the things that they want. So I was talking about that and a guy came back and he's like, I'm working on like a Brazilian jiu-jitsu tracker app or something.
Okay.
Though there's like a billion of those ideas out there.
And how is he using either Bitcoin or Nostr?
I think he's using like Nostr to, I didn't dig into the details. I just saw it go by, but.
There was another group, I'm forgetting the name, but a couple of years ago, they wanted to build an activity or exercise app where you got, like Bitcoin was integrated.
Mm-hmm.
It took them years to build. Yeah. I don't know if they ever reached the experience they wanted to, but it just sort of speaks to the early days of how poor the dev UX is,
yeah.
But it's rapidly getting better. Combining that with AI is super exciting. Another exciting example from a couple nights ago, Miles Suter, who works with me at Block, yeah. He kind of reminded me of David. He's like, I mean, he's a PM as well, and like
he's also an idiot.
He's not.
I think he's a philosophy major, so he's not.
Miles,
he's not computer science like DK, but
very out there too.
Miles, yeah, love Miles.
Yeah,
but he was vibe coding, and in under 1 hour, he prompted it to like he wanted a mobile app that looked like Cash App, mm-hmm. integrated BDK and LDK and payments, and he made a testnet payment.
It worked.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How did he do that?
Like,
I
don't know.
Well, which tools? I want to hear more about.
I think it was Lovable.
Okay, yeah.
Yep.
Lovable is actually, I think, the one that Carnage used for his project. He got something up really quickly, too.
Yeah.
But it's kind of just front end. There's no back end.
I saw a little bit of his prompts, but I didn't see all of them, so I don't know the exact sequence. But that's super encouraging. David, you just mentioned hackathon. I don't know if we've talked about it on the show yet, but I mean, it's still early formation.
Oh, we didn't talk about it?
We've mentioned it. Yeah. You announced it.
I announced it last
show.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well,
but keep shilling.
Yeah.
Well, after the show, our next meeting is talk about the hackathon, and we have a bunch of really amazing people that are going to join that meeting. We're still just figuring out the details, but we're all committed to it and excited about it. What are we hoping for? I think we already have a number of tool makers who want to come because they also see what we're talking about and what we're seeing, and they want to learn like they're maybe like 90% of the way there to delivering the tools needed for AI to build things for people. They want to discover the last 10%. I think this hackathon can be a great way to discover that.
Yep.
I guess I'm not expecting the hackathon to be perfect. Like the outcome is like everything's built and everything's perfect, but we'll learn a ton. There'll be some cool stuff created there, and we'll have like each of these tools teams, and there's going to probably be 3-4 different companies and tools vendors there are going to take some homework with them. And then over the coming weeks and months, improve their tools so that let's do another hackathon later in the year, and the tools will be really shiny.
But I'm hoping to make the hackathon successful, so everybody comes and feels good about it. That like you can get like we do a lot of pre-work with what kinds of tools can be integrated in what ways, so that people who come and don't have to think too much about Lightning, they can launch a game or some little app, a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu app or whatever they have in mind, and they can have like some sort of Lightning payment, something at least the basics of it in, even if they can't do the more sophisticated, then we can sort of improve the tools and improve the, you know, how much you can do with the app.
Well, I agree with both. We're going to get learnings on both ends.
Yeah.
To me, the most beautiful thing about the hackathon right now, besides hopefully just, as we always say, building the bridge between Silicon Valley and Bitcoin, because that's like, man, when that happens, like, I am bullish. But it's a forcing function. Like, the fact that we're so close, the fact that Carnage can almost get things done, but he's like, well, we need a little bit more training with the NDK things. Honestly, that's probably the kind of deal where if Pablo, like, and Carnage sat down together for, like, an hour, he could have that fixed, I mean, I don't know, but within a week or something. Right? Mm-hmm. So if this is the forcing function where, you know, the companies that we're working with that are providing, you know, their APIs or whatever, if it's like, well, you only need to make whatever, these like 3 or 4 modifications so that someone can vibe code with your API or your SDK. I mean, that's probably the difference between like having Bitcoin payments go mainstream and not, at least in the next couple months.
So what kind of developers do you guys want to show up? I mean, we're going to have, you know, organizers who are enthusiastic about it, like us, and some other folks. We're going to have tool vendors there, but what kind of engineers do we want there? Or not, I shouldn't just say engineers.
Vibineers.
People, builders, PMs, designers, engineers, whoever thinks of themselves or wants to think of themselves as a builder, who do we want here for the hackathon?
I think some of it is like, do we want to create a little bit of a tracks or vertical or specific focus? And I guess that's part of like the meeting we'll have like in an hour or whatever. But like,
I'm just trying to finish that meeting.
Yeah, you want to just do the meeting on the show?
Yeah, like, let's just watch the recap. You have a question? Let's just watch PPJ, which is a new thing we're doing.
Right, right. Well, I mean, I am very drawn to games because it's just such an open space of creativity, and they can be very simple and they can be like more sophisticated. So it doesn't, you know, you can accomplish something end to end, kind of a closed system end to end, and you can drop payments in it and like present it to the world, and it's great. You don't need to like go run off and find customers and, you know, sort of build something sort of more traditionally. So I'm really leaning towards kind of game developers or people who love playing games, who have ideas in games that keeps it fun and light. And if things break, you don't worry about it with games. If you're moving money and trying to do serious stuff, maybe you worry about it more. So I would sort of be an advocate of like, let's make it like a Bitcoin game jam, like vibe coding game jam or something. But you know, certainly open if people have Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu app or some other thing like that. Like, I think creativity should flourish. We shouldn't have too much. But like, I don't know if we want to start having specific tracks where we try to, you know, sort of recognize people who want to do certain types of things. But I think it's more open call than.
Yeah. We'll want to come up with like prize categories or something. And then that's another thing. We have traction with like, there's a bunch of companies who are willing to put up money for prize sponsoring prizes. So
including through my fund Hivemind, I'm very excited to do this. I see, you know, two tracks that I'm personally very excited about. One track that I would say includes, like, I think the Indie Game Jam, I think Indie Games is a great example. But I like one general track is like vibe coding, where you add either Lightning payments and Nostr identity in there. So, you know, that could be a game where it's like, and the good news here is like, I think there's a window of time. So I think it's awesome we're doing this now, where there is not a standard on identity for vibe coding. There is not a standard on payments. Yep. So like, if we get, you know, 1,000 really cool, interesting long tail apps and games that are published, and you can just, you can use Bitcoin payments in this, dope. Oh, I can just log in with Nostr. Boom. We have a chance to kind of get that early network effect before, you know, more centralized players do. So anyway, so I think that's really interesting. And so vibe coding, but like in all kinds of areas, like I would love, you know, I have a bunch of ideas, but hell, maybe I'll try and do this, you know, with like taking the Stemster project and revamping that. So you have more people that are making music that can share and have split Zap payments, because that's something they never actually integrated where, you know, someone, you know, Steve makes me a beat, which would be dope. I get out there, I rap, which I did yesterday on Not What It Is. So to
do some freestyle,
you hear a little bit of freestyle, some, but like, yeah. And so then, you know, if I contribute the rap on top of that beat, we can have easy, you know, split payments in there. There's tons of ideas like that. I think, you know, you could even have, I don't know, creative, someone, you know, builds an engine to make music and, you know, songs that you have a marketplace around that where people can get paid for doing that. So I think vibe coding with Nostr and Lightning is one area. The second area, maybe the area that I'm even more excited about, is the in thinking about what can we do newly on Bitcoin and Nostr that can't be done anywhere else, is the topic we discussed last week, which is my other besides solar major obsession right now, autonomous life. Yep. I cannot stop thinking about this. And I think this might be, frankly, the biggest idea that I've stumbled upon, and maybe the like scariest, but also the coolest, whatever.
And I feel like there's been a lot of our discussions in the hallways, like,
oh, yeah,
like with Bob and with Max Fang and Artur, you know,
Artur
virtually. Yeah. But in the hallways, we've had this topic keeps coming up and everybody's kind of got a little piece of the puzzle. And it feels like we just need to kind of figure out what are the roadblocks and how do you get it all together.
So one of my personal goals coming out of this hackathon is, can we have examples of autonomous or very close to autonomous agents conducting commerce with one another? And this relies on Nostr potentially for the identity, Bitcoin for the payments, and secure enclaves and confidential compute for the actual brains of the operation. But my hope is, and without doxing who it is or what it is, we have at least one entrepreneur hacker we work with who thinks he can have a demo ready before the hackathon, which is sick.
Is this somebody I know?
Somebody we were all in an email thread with.
Okay.
So yeah.
I need to check my email.
Okay, yeah. Spicy email.
Yeah, he may not click reply on that. But the point is, if we can have that live, and then have the payment infrastructure from, you know, companies like, you know, Jordy's company,
the name Few Sats.
Thank you. Few Bitcoin, right?
Max's homie.
Yeah, exactly. I know. My brain's a little tired. Some of the stuff that Alexi's doing, Albie's doing, like there's all these, things you can do once you have autonomous agents paying each other. So that's the track I'm probably most excited about.
Yeah. And I think we got to, like, I felt like last week before the show, I felt like, okay, you got to squint a lot at sci-fi. Then during the show, I feel like all the pieces are kind of there, but I don't really have a list of what are the roadblocks. Like we talked about, do you need to be able to like verify what open source software is running if you want, say, an autonomous life to run an eCash Mint or something?
Yeah.
Like, do we have a list of those, or can we make a list of those so we are all on the same page about?
Well, it's also why like the hackathon is a forcing function, as Max said, and we will come, and also having a prize category that focuses on, or that's one of the focuses.
I'm trying to give Max some, like, use that energy to PM this into existence.
Maybe, right? I will. I am working on an essay on it, so maybe I can list that out on the essay.
Essay is a good starting.
I'll have it shipped before the thing, so.
Yep. All right.
You heard it here first.
And then kind of last thing on the vibe coding, I can't promise it's last, but the other thing I want to mention, did you see the Amjad tweet about...
Amjad's getting a lot of love.
He's very involved in a lot of relevant stuff.
Yeah.
He sort of was commenting on how he had spent most of his real professional career and kind of his entrepreneurial journey, which I don't know, it's been 6 or 8 years, been, you know,
way over.
Like 8 to 10.
Eight to 10 years. Okay.
You count Code Academy before that.
Yeah, right. Code Academy. Yeah. So it's like over a decade of like him focused on trying to help more people learn to code. And he's like, this is what I've spent my whole career on. And he's like, I'm kind of in team vibe code. Like maybe you shouldn't learn to code and you should learn to use these new tools instead. And I think that's kind of a big thing coming from him, because he's kind of probably like the most public, has the most time invested. His personal reputation, identity, company, everything is sort of created around this other thing. And he's saying like, look, guys, I see the future and it's not that. Let's go. I think that's a big, strong signal, because I hear a lot of people who are like, not as connected. They're like very skeptical of vibe coding. It's like, it's not real software. It has all these problems. I was on a thread this morning where I chimed in. It was was it Rob from AnchorWatch? Rob and NVK. And sort of like talking about how kind of crappy it is in a sense, which like, you know, is true. But then I was like, well, here, try these Cursor rules. And it's like ways to think about refactoring and not launching new code. And like the more that you can compound your, you know, your experience using these tools, the better they become for you.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's all about expectations and timelines.
Yeah.
So if given so much hype, if you've not used this yet or you try it once after hearing all this hype, if you expect it to like write flight aviation software and operating systems with no bugs in an hour of vibe coding from a non-engineer, that's a misset expectation. But there's a lot of different categories, and I think some are already being won over now and some will be won over soon, and then others might take 10 or 20 years. Like something that you brought up before, David, is disposable software. Like you build an application for one-time use or one-time user. And for that type of application, tech debt and like worrying about all the edge cases, you don't really care as long as it gets the immediate job done, because the only purpose is that one job. And anyone who's done software development knows that like developing a proof of concept is relatively easy. Like a hackathon, you can build something pretty cool quickly, but 90%+ of the work is all the details to actually get production. Work in every phone operating system version and Android version and like
all the hardware
version and like
the boring stuff.
It's so boring, but it's like takes up most of the time. But for disposable software, then that's probably not needed. So, and who cares about tech debt?
Yeah.
So for that, that's a category that seems completely reasonable to do now. And if 100 or 1,000 times more people can build an application like that for their lives, that's probably going to happen. Whereas doing system, so Lightning Development Kit is software that my team works on. And I don't see AI replacing that work today or this year or even in the coming years. It's moving money and it's very low level systems engineering and low level protocol work. Where I think AI tools will help on a project like that is to discover bugs and help with like improving testing and fuzz testing and just like assisting in that way. But not like wholesale replacing engineers.
I wonder if there's something interesting there. Like I would guess, I haven't been as hands-on with it as you are, but I would guess that a lot of the work that they're doing is more like discussion, debate, kind of, it's not really the coding and the infrastructure and the scaffolding and the configuration files, but it's more like, should it be one way or should it be another way? And kind of more of a...
And because of the protocol, like communication and coming to consensus with other groups too, other implementations. And so that requires skills that at least AI hasn't demonstrated yet. But one thing I've definitely learned is that like, if anyone does try out the AI tools and then comes to some, view on what they can and can't do today, you shouldn't then set it aside for 3 more years.
Right.
You should come back every like 3 months.
Yeah.
Because it's improving so quickly that if you discover its limits today for how you might want to apply it and it's not good enough to really help you, come back in 3 months and there's a good chance that like answer will change.
Replit Agent V2 just launched, was it yesterday or a day or two ago? It was supposed to be massive changes in how much analysis and kind of post facto work it does to sort of make sure that it does the thing that you asked. So it's kind of like good at debugging itself is the claim. I haven't tried it yet, but my guess is they wouldn't make such a claim kind of without some substance behind it. I'm sure you saw the Google Gemini 2.5 Pro.
Well, and Lalu, posted that he's used it successfully to refactor code. I'd like to see that code actually, like, just to see what it did. But and then I think David, you heard elsewhere that someone had success refactoring Rust code with that tool. So I'm gonna push for like someone to experiment with that on LDK, or there's like over 10 different infrastructure projects in Bitcoin that are Rust based. So we should at least see some of those experiments to see how well it works. And then that could become a really valuable tool.
When he ran it through, I think some sort of a migration or something he had recently done, that it came up with about 70% of the PRs that he had raised anyway. I thought it was something like that, right? I don't know the number.
But I mean, and for context, for those of you who don't know, Lalu Roast Beef is like probably one of the smartest engineers I've ever met. And so this is not like someone that's just out here like making, you know, small applications.
It's not like DK.
Sorry, DK.
Just kidding.
Or me.
All good.
JK. But I think there's a couple of interesting things this raises. One is, you know, I certainly don't agree that no one should ever learn to code.
Yeah.
I think what he's getting at, and the point of this is, if you're learning to code and you want to go to like, you know, Hacker Act or whatever and make whatever six figures in 3 months, those days are gone. I think to your point and to both of your points, you know, the higher quote unquote you get in any field, the less it becomes about the mechanics and the more it becomes about the taste, the other skills of working with people, like the thinking through processes, frankly, the creativity of like, well, what should I build in the first place? Or now that I see that this AI, you know, spit out this thing, what new opportunities or adjacent possibles does it unlock? And so I think there will always be people that code, but it's people that genuinely love it, that are genuinely really good at it and can genuinely 100 or 1,000x their productivity with all of these, you know, sort of implementation tools at the helm. So I think both things are true. And I think in general, the next wave of implications are even more interesting to me. One wave of implications is, as we said yesterday in Oster News, it fattens the long tail. So anyone can make weird, you know, sort of art, applications, games, movies, whatever that appeal to a long tail of users, get their sort of Kevin Kelly 1,000 true fans and hopefully earn a living, which I think is a very beautiful thing. The second thing though it does, and this is a bigger topic that I wanted to touch on today, because this is the other topic I can't stop thinking about, is I think it is a continuation of the process of driving most virtual services to zero. And this is huge for the world. So to tee this up, the other tweet thread that we talked about in the chat, at least the one that I can't stop thinking about, is from Balaji last Saturday. And credit to Balaji. He's always one of the most provocative thinkers, sometimes right, sometimes wrong, sometimes 10 years early, but he's always provocative. And this one I think was just like spot on. And so Balaji's claim was with the release of DeepSeek and open source software in general, and I guess AI coding, making the production of software continuing to get better, that basically it's going to drive the cost of models and most software production to zero. Cool. I think we all agree with that. Now, his claim, though, is that China is basically doing this strategically, that the release of DeepSeek basically is saying, look, the more we can drive the production cost to zero, what that does is, in the Joel Spolsky sense, commoditizes the complement. Commoditize the complement means, okay, cool. If we wipe out all of the value from the model itself and the ability to create software, well, then where do you actually make money? There's still an opportunity to make money. And the way you make money is by being the best at hardware.
And I think when DeepSeek launched that weekend, I think the next time markets open, I think like $1 trillion of big tech was knocked off, right?
Yeah. I mean, temporary.
Yeah, but it's like they saw that and like, whoa, okay. Like something happened here.
It was an effective.
Our open source thing had a big impact on markets.
Yeah. An effective attack. Now, parallel of that with, you know, some data points that I have been seeing just in my own sort of personal life and travels, which is that I think everyone, or at least everyone I know, is radically underestimating just how fucking good China is at building hardware, cheaper, better, and faster. I always knew China was cheap, but I think now it's good. So data points there, you know, on my last couple trips to Mexico, in the same way that if I call an Uber in the US, I'm always like, yes, I got a Tesla, because a Tesla is a nice car. Smooth, it's electric. In Mexico, I got like, I don't know, quarter or third of my rides were all BYD, which is the big Chinese electric car manufacturing company. And every time I got a BYD, I was like, yes, it's a BYD. It's not 80% as good of a Tesla, but it'll only cost $10,000.
Build your dream.
Or I think there's a bunch of variations. But the point is, it's cheap, it's nice, and China made the whole thing. And now you're starting to hear people say, well, actually, maybe China's way further ahead on the chip production than we thought they were. And so and by the way, on the energy topic where I'm getting really obsessed, they're the ones that have for years flooded the market with cheap solar cells. They're leading the way on battery technology. BYD just announced last week that they have a new battery charging technology where you can charge the whole car in less than 5 minutes. They're even beating Tesla on some of this tech stuff, which is crazy to me. So in that world where they commoditize the complement, software and models and AI goes to zero, China is in a position to win based on physical hardware, running the compute, and most critically, building and running the energy. Amazing. So then from the US perspective, you're like, well, what do we do? Like, we're just kind of like lazy compared to China, which is probably true. I thought we could kind of outcompete with free markets and creativity. Although interestingly, China's the one doing the free market stuff here, pushing with open source and winning on, you know, actually having better margins and better products, while the US is trying to do regulatory capture, which is crazy to me. And so Balaji's then response is, he had two responses. He's like, how can the U.S., remain competitive? And the first one was?
Bitcoin.
So why is he saying Bitcoin? I have some thoughts, but I'm curious what you guys think.
I didn't see, these were like follow-ups. I think I saw the original tweet, but then I don't think this was a follow-up. He had two answers, and one was Bitcoin.
His two answers were the U.S. needs to double down on Bitcoin and community. I have less thoughts on exactly what he means by community, but obviously Bitcoin's a very provocative one for this show.
Yeah. I mean, I think Bitcoin is, you know, in a world where everything is changing and everything's changing fast and everything's competitive, there is no second best, right? So like Bitcoin is like the one and only, and there's not really a second best money. There's all kinds of other technology ideas. But if it is the one and only and it is the best, like it's some amount of certainty in a very uncertain world.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of natural what else, historically you might have believed in like gold or real estate or something like that, but they all have problems with, you know, they could be taxed in different ways and they could get confiscated in different ways. And like, you know, Bitcoin is very unique in that it doesn't have those kinds of risks. And so it does seem like in a very uncertain world, there's actually more certainty in Bitcoin than almost anything else. I mean, I always think of Bitcoin as just like this fundamental truth about how people collaborate. And it is the only thing that you really can study and understand truth about, right? It's truth about how people collaborate, but it's almost to the extent that it's like a law of physics in the kind of truth that it has.
You've said not corruptible before too, and I think that's like nice, succinct framing. I didn't understand though how that's an answer for the United States.
Well, the way I think about it, and it's kind of, it's a little bit sad, and I hope he's not entirely right on this, because then it's like, well, we can kind of only win on this like finance or like financial innovation in a way, which is kind of what the U.S. has done, I guess, in hollowing out all like manufacturing or whatever in the last 50, 60, 70 years. But I think the argument is basically like, look, anything that we create, China can fast follow and they can do it really, really well and operate it cheaper. And so if software and digital stuff goes to zero and they can like just trounce us on hardware, I hope that's not true. I mean, we still have Elon, and like I watched his all hands with Tesla and just came away so bullish again on that company.
And we don't know what happens with like robotics manufacturing. It might be that we took this 50 years off being good at manufacturing, but like that old style manufacturing isn't really going to matter 10 years from now.
Totally. And one can hope that happens, and like, you know, we push for that. But there's no arguing that China's like, they're killing it at manufacturing, right? And so then the kind of question is like, well, where does the U.S. remain, maintain an edge? One possibility is basically just to embrace Bitcoin as much as possible, stock as much Bitcoin as humanly possible in the U.S. balance sheet, encourage companies to do the same. It's kind of already happening a little bit, and potentially open free markets using Bitcoin. I think both are potentially interesting. Just like the pure financial play is like, look, Bitcoin, we think is going to be the currency of the next century. It's, you know, as I've said many, many times, it's energy backed money. It's incorruptible. It obeys the laws of physics. And so if we have an advantage to just basically stack before China can, and we think a lot of value creation basically accrues to the money itself, at least in this adoption phase over the next decade, then we basically just like kind of win by, you know, being a little bit like Switzerland. We just like stuff the coffers and it's like, all right, you guys do all the work, but we got
that. Also, I feel like that's a very negative framing of the thing.
Agreed.
I think there's also very positive or optimistic ways to think about it. So like if you can do things, if there's abundance in everything and you can actually, everybody can have manufacturing and energy is very easily accessible by everybody and everybody has more than anything that they want, like their wildest dreams are fulfilled, then it's kind of reasonable to say like, well, look, we're just going to hold Bitcoin and that's like, we're going to do what we want and be creative and hang in communities if that's what we're just going to hold Bitcoin because that's fine. And like, I think there's like a little bit of a, like we're a little bit old and we have this like moral judgment of like, you know, you haven't contributed the right way or something, right? Like maybe there's other ways that you'll find to contribute that are more like orchestrating creativity. And it doesn't have to be like, you know, the industrial age, like nose to the grindstone kind of,
be there,
you know,
and 7 days a week.
So maybe it's like, fine, I'm going to hold Bitcoin and do creative things and family and community. And like, that might be just like, the future may just look like that. And we just don't really know how to be comfortable with that as like a, you have maybe some like moral misgivings from kind of the world that you kind of grew up in or know today.
Totally. We all grew up sort of Puritan West. And like, I totally buy that. And to be clear, the argument that we're making here is that if, you know, the marginal cost, like basically if like, if you're not making money doing things, whatever, like whatever value there is flows into the monetary system itself. So like, if you think about Bitcoin, the one way I think about it is it's GDP coin. It literally just tracks global GDP. Yeah. Now we're in the early adoption phase. We probably have a couple more orders of magnitude before it reaches stabilization. But at some point, if global quote unquote GDP production is 2% a year or 10% a year, whatever, that's what Bitcoin in theory should go up as. So I agree. And there is a lot of morals tied around that. I do think there's a second also, you know, where there's still, at least in this transition phase, more traditional business competitive sense in the world that is a little bit more optimistic as well. And the optimism for me is that Bitcoin, in addition to being energy-backed money, it also represents what in theory was the biggest American ideal, which was openness, free markets, just freedom in general. And so it's somewhat ironic that China, by open sourcing things and actually embracing competition, has in some ways become the more free market country, while the US has become a lot more sort of sadly authoritarian over the years. But at the end of the day, there's still a reason Chinese billionaires are trying to leave there and live in the United States. Like the US still has a lot of incredible freedom left. We still have the Constitution. You know, in the case that, you know, China still has to censor the models with things like Tiananmen Square or whatever, like the US still is not doing that. So that there is some edge there. If the US were to lean all the way in, not just to stacking coins, but to embracing Bitcoin as a way to, 10,000x the kinds of apps and markets that we can reach and become a global leader in global markets again, that's a game that potentially China just might not play. Because even if they see all this unfolding, it may just be in the same way that we talked about, you know, Kagi is competing with Google by just doing something Google won't do right now, which is, hey, we're not doing ads. We're just doing paid search. And so that's how a startup can kind of attack a company that's got incredible market dominance. It might be the case that China ultimately is like, look, we're just never going to embrace Bitcoin because we want control. And like free markets is ultimately antithetical.
Well, I mean, there's also like, what are the motivations of people, like the leaders of these countries? Are they want to be recognized as leaders who've led the people to accomplish something, and that same sense of accomplishment may disappear when robots do everything. You know, so I don't know what time frame is that 40 years, 50 years, 100 years, or is it like 10 or 20? I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's also a larger sort of like philosophical question that I've been wrestling with, which is if we do. So anyone that hasn't watched the last Elon All Hands on Tesla, like he literally lays out the future, like. If you haven't read the Tesla master plans, he keeps updating them. Like that man has laid out everything consistently for years, continues to hit it. And it's like the whole story is solar, storage, EVs, a radical abundance. You can have whatever you want. And I believe he's going to deliver because he's delivered everything he said so far. Now, and by the way, I didn't even know they're doing crazy stuff like now. In addition to like they build their own batteries, they're like actually freaking mining and refining. I don't know if they're mining it, but they're refining the lithium like themselves, it's crazy how deep in the weeds they are. So one thing though that I kind of think he misses and most of us miss is in that world where we can really have radical abundance, anything we want, is that a good thing? Right. I also think about like, you know, the kind of like animation stories where people are like basically obese and just like sitting there like strapped into like this digital world, like slurping on a cola and like, I don't know. I mean, that's a much deeper topic, but
I think that comes with assumptions that we don't change that much. Like there might be like maybe these, you know, the GLP drugs that everybody's into, maybe that vision of the future actually gets mediated by better tools and ways.
Good. But I think there's probably still a massive unlock and just, and maybe some of the stuff we're talking about with vibe coding or whatever can help it, which is to help empower people to know that creative potential is unlimited and you can literally do whatever you want. The question is, the hard question then is discipline and what do you want to do? This is like also Chris Pike line that he said a couple of times, VC, I think is pretty sharp, which is the problem when we had, you know, unlimited education on the internet. It wasn't like, oh, now MIT is open to everyone. Like everyone's going to be a great mechanical engineer. It's just like, no, it's like the will, motivation, desire. I think those become, frankly, the most scarce attributes in the next century.
Well, what's interesting about what you just said we may be at a point where people can do anything or they have any choice, but the doomers say that AI is going to make it so that we can do nothing or like it's pointless to do anything because AI will do everything for you. So is it, which is it?
I think it could
do
be
future
both.
Humans have nothing to do or everything to do?
I mean, we can ride our mountain bikes if we want, right? That was fun. Like we could do that, but we could also contribute to trying to make Lightning or Nostr better. Like we can do that if we want. It's like you have options. You can do whatever. You don't have to go make widgets in a factory. And like we kind of already intuit that you don't have to make widgets in a factory. But we don't intuit that you don't have to necessarily show up in a certain way in the world. Like, it is a boundless expanse of creativity, and you can contribute in lots of different ways, in ways that you want, that you feel valued. It doesn't have to be the one thing, you know?
But it requires a tremendous amount of unlearning, right? Because, frankly, I think, you know, I don't have a kid, but if I did, I think I would probably, like, encourage them to, this is a little bit far field for the show, but get into meditation or something early just so they can start to hear their own inner voice. Yeah. Because the reality is, like, if you shove, you know, all of us, like, we went through a school system where it was like, hey, man, like, you're here at 9, you, like, sit down and shut up because the teacher's going to be, you know, whatever, drawing some figures on the board. It's hard to unlearn all of that. So my hope is, I think this could go very dystopian, very utopian. The answer is probably somewhere in the middle. It's like some people are, you know, able to take advantage of these opportunities, and, you know, maybe some end up in Zuck's metaverse.
I think there's one phrase that I always repeat in my head that I kind of, like, discovered maybe decades ago, but did not recognize when I was younger, which is, there is not one right way.
Correct.
And I think when you feel like there is a right way, I would always ask the question, like, why do you think that that's the right way? Who told you that's the right way? Who told you you have to do that? Because there's not one right way for almost anything. There's not one right way to have a relationship with somebody. There's not one right way to make a podcast.
Find a job.
Yeah.
I mean, the best job, as you said yourself, like, how'd you get your job? You created it.
You created it. Then the job showed up later, you know?
Well, yeah, exactly.
Like, literally, yeah, right? And you know, like, you guys know my wife. She kind of has been struggling to make a bunch of things and help people, but she didn't know really, like, what kind of job is it. Now it's turned into, like, this amazing thing. It's, like, flourishing for her, but there's not, like, one right way to do it. And I point to, you know, Steve's kind of creative approach as that. But I think that's also what I would point out in this. Like, is it utopian? Is it dystopian? It's like, there's not one right way.
Yeah,
when we say things like education, we think about sitting in a classroom. We're like, oh, that's old. You don't need to do that anymore. But then we try to put it on YouTube and we're like, oh, this is the future of education. And I think, I was sharing with Steve, I think the future of education, I went on DeepSeek. And if you do the reasoning model and you have it do the thinking and you have it explain its thinking, I was like, this is how you educate a young human to think. Because it's asking, what does the person who's asking me this want to understand? Well, I know this and I know that. These are my assumptions. These are the facts I know in the world. And it walks through all of that in the thinking phase. And then it comes to the phase where it says, okay, here's the answer.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's showing your work. I think this is, like, the greatest tool for education that the world has ever seen. Nobody talks about it like it's an education tool. Everybody's like, oh, this is like part of this innovative AI future.
Productivity.
You know? Yeah, yeah. Which it is. Like, peace on that. I'm not against that future. But I also think, if you want to figure out how do you educate a young human, let's show how to think. Let's show your work.
Yeah, agreed.
In these machines.
Maybe walk through, you had a specific example about a small airport, right?
Do you want to tell what you
said? Well, I forget your exact prompt, but David and I went indoor rock climbing in this past week. And I pointed out that there's actually an airstrip right next door, which you can't see because of a fence. Yeah, up in San Rafael. So I discovered this because one day I was leaving and all of a sudden there's a plane flying right. It felt like right at me. And I'm like, oh my God, it's going to crash. And then it landed. And then I looked at Google satellite view and I'm like, oh, there's an airstrip right there.
Yeah.
So I think David prompted, what was your specific prompt?
I think I said something like, what kind of airplanes land at the San Rafael airport or something?
And I mean, it seems like kind of a basic question and kind of boring, but like there was like a tremendous amount of reasoning about it. And it made me think of, like, I always feel like a good interview question and then engagement with a candidate is to ask them to estimate something. Yeah. And then the actual answer doesn't matter. It's the process. How did they think about getting that answer?
Yep.
Is far more illustrative. And it just felt like that's what this AI was doing. And I agree, it's a great way to learn how to think.
So here, I brought it up. So what kind of airplanes land at the San Rafael airport? That was what I prompted. In the thinking phase, it thought for 47 seconds. And it said, okay, so I need to figure out what kinds of airplanes land at the San Rafael airport. Let me start by recalling what I know about the airport. San Rafael airport, I think it's in California, right? Maybe in Marin County? I've heard of it before, but I'm not exactly sure about its size or types of planes that it uses. First, I should consider the size of the airport. If it's a smaller airport, it probably can't handle large commercial jets. Maybe it's a general aviation airport. Those usually have shorter runways and cater to smaller planes, and on and on and on. This went on. You know, I've read about like 10-15% of it now. It went on and on. But could you imagine if you don't know how to answer, if you just like throw your hands up, I don't know. Or maybe historically you would say, oh, I'm going to look on Wikipedia. Well, now instead of just looking on Wikipedia, you can actually say, well, if you wanted to discover this information or uncover this information, what thought process would you go to do it? And you can imagine asking a scientific question and some, you know, seeing how the scientific method goes, or a question that humans don't yet know, like an experiment you want to run. And you could imagine learning how it thinks about running that experiment that you might want to run. And then you could probably say, okay, run it. You know, if it can be done in like an information world, you can probably just run it. And if it needs a wet lab or something, you know, maybe we'll have that in some manufacturing environment, a robotic environment soon.
And you also, I saw, DK, I think you've been very good about using this. I need to figure out how to get the, I guess use Grok on my phone. My Wi-Fi or my cell service is so bad. I need to get a new cell service provider that I don't really use the voice thing. Despite loving technology, I'm one of the more anachronistic people I know. So one thing I thought was super cool. Actually, did two cool things. You took a picture of a tree and we figured out what it was. That was dope.
Oh, yeah.
But, we've been also discussing, the potential for off-grid mining,
mm-hmm.
and potentially an off-grid cloud, potentially solar powered with batteries. And, you know, it used to be really tricky. Like when we were working on the paper 4 or 5 years ago, like Arc had to get in there and build models and all this stuff. But you just like asked us like, hey, can you just like walk through the analysis? And we're still not 100% sure that analysis is right. So we're still in the early phases, but it will continue to get better. You know, still humans necessary to kind of like, actually, I think you're missing something critical. But the point is, it gave a pretty interesting and like step-by-step analysis of like, well, here's the cost of the panels. Here's the cost of the electricity, whatever that you would get from the grid. Here's the cost, you know, of the miner, blah, blah, blah. I was pretty impressed with that.
Yeah. Have you ever done anything like that with like analyze? Could you buy an acre of property, say in like Arizona or something? Could you like profitably solo mine at that?
I haven't done that, no.
So, because like you need to know like what's the cost of solar panels and what kind of panels you need, and do you need a battery, and do you need a cooling system, and how much, like how much is it, like the, I think it's like 5 to 6 hours of sun. I forget the sun loading factor or whatever, but there's some factor where it's like if you have 5.5 to 6 hours, that's I think about the best that you get kind of anywhere on a consistent basis. So it just like pulls in all those numbers and runs calculations for you, and it'll tell you like, oh, I think you could the first one I did, I thought it gave a payback period that seemed too optimistic. I think it was like suggesting 3 months, which is
why
almost certainly not true
for now.
Yeah. But then like if you ask it again and reprompt it and stuff, because I don't think I'm very serious about this, but it made me curious after our solar discussion. Could you like, why don't people or can't people or don't people go out and just like, say, buy like an acre in the middle of nowhere, I don't know, West Texas or somewhere that's kind of like not very contested property, like not, you know, it's not like a dense city center, and install a bunch of solar panels and run like your own mining operation there. Like, is that like crazy not viable today, or is it like maybe it could work, or like?
Well, it's generally not viable yet, but I think it can become viable. If you're only using solar, then like you just said, there's like there's a utilization factor, which is relatively low. Let's say it's 25%. And if you're not using the grid for the other portion, that means you're only mining a quarter of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Your competitors are global and they're mining all the time. So you're making a quarter of the revenue that your competitors are.
Because of like the 6 hour out of 24?
Well, you're only mining a quarter of the time. Yeah. So you're making a quarter of the revenue. And the equipment you purchased to mine, that's the critical factor, because even if your energy, because also your energy is not free either, because you had to install all this.
Yep.
You have a CapEx for your solar equipment. But let's just say that's free for simplicity,
yeah,
for now. You still need to, your ASIC hardware cost has to be substantially lower. Because your competitor, it can't just be the same cost as your competitors, because they're making 4 times the revenue. What I think makes that viable in the future is older ASIC chip hardware that is actually less energy efficient, will sort of life cycle out of its initial use, maybe mm-hmm. after like 4 years, because it'll no longer be economical for a miner that's having to pay 4 or 6 or 8 cents per kilowatt hour for energy. It's no longer economically viable, but the chip still works.
Mm-hmm.
So to them, it's useless. It has no value. And if everyone is like them, then it literally has no value. So it would just go into the garbage bin. However, if you have your plot of land in West Texas or whatever, you'd be happy to take that off of their hands. In fact, maybe they'd even pay you. So it doesn't, recycle, right?
Exactly. It's cheaper.
And you'll take that. And then now all of a sudden you have free or even cheaper than that ASIC hardware. And then now we're in business in terms of being profitable. And of course, there'll be others like you, and then it'll be a competitive balance there. And so it'll be marked up in price beyond zero. But as long as it's like a quarter of the price or something of the of other hardware, then it becomes economically viable.
Is the miner like the main cost? Because I could imagine another scenario where, like, let's say 6 hours, so a quarter of a duty cycle or whatever you'd call it. But let's say that you actually do a 4X build out and also build batteries. Now there's other costs in that. Like, does that CapEx start to get too crazy, or do you think there's like maybe some break even where
we're very close? And so this actually, we can have these exact numbers for our Earth Day discussion. So this is something that when we talked about this in 2020, it was too early, but now this is becoming my new obsession. So if there's entrepreneurs out there who are thinking about this, I think we're about to be at an inflection point where this becomes an extremely investable opportunity. So the way I think about it is you can actually do this in three ways. Exactly what Steve said, which is you use fully depreciated like S19s or old miners. What you're saying though is also very interesting, because what you could do is, if you overbuild solar, and this is, I think, the paradigm shift that most of even Silicon Valley that's pushing for nuclear still doesn't understand. This is the alpha, the secret. If, because solar keeps getting so much cheaper, it's on that 40% learning curve. So every time you double cumulative capacity, you reduce the cost 40%. Batteries, lithium ion specifically, are on their own, which is 25%. So basically they're
that's 25% cheaper year over year?
No, 25% cheaper, doubling. So that there's many factors that come into play. One factor is how quickly batteries are being deployed. So if I'm doubling, you know, every year, then it's yes, every year. But if I'm doubling every 6 months, then it goes even faster. And critically, you have companies like Tesla now that are like, they're deploying batteries faster than solar. That's the big change that's happened recently, because batteries were a few doublings behind solar. Anyways,
The battery stuff is scaling faster from the economics of it are improving faster.
Well, the economic, yes. And even though it has a less steep curve, so it's not getting, solar gets cheaper every doubling, but batteries are being deployed faster. So year over year, batteries are getting cheaper than solar in a percentage basis right now, which is mm-hmm. crazy. So I still haven't figured exactly when that threshold point is. And hell, I may even, this may even be a hive mind incubation that you're hearing about first here. But what's going to be wild is you can use the latest miners if you radically overbuild the amount of solar, and you combine it with batteries. And the other beautiful thing about this, which I think is super cool, is it's not only costs, like what you're saying, which is great, or what you were saying as well, but now you actually have some additional benefits. So I think what's really cool is you could start to think about, you know, decentralization of mining, which I know is something very important to you in Spiral, and potentially even decentralized clouds. And so TBD, there's a lot more I have to say coming on this, but I think you could basically have, call it free, open, censorship resistant. It's really good for free and open censorship resistant mining, and also just access to to a cloud for workloads that maybe that's where the self-autonomous AIs are going to live.
It also has tremendous privacy benefits.
Yeah.
Because if you're mining off the grid and you're earning Bitcoin from transaction fees and newly minted Bitcoin, all of that's KYC free. And the more that, as you said, can be democratized and accessible to people around the world, that's very valuable. By the way, quick sidebar. One thing we want in the show is like more audience engagement,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And like early versions of this show, we had some good audience engagement. We really liked it. We want more of that.
Yep.
We now have up on the screen here, we can see people's engagement.
Yeah.
How do people engage? If they're watching this on X, I think there's a chat box that they can...
I think X has a chat box that we're not able to see right now.
Okay.
So I think these people are
on YouTube.
Well, yeah, they all have little YouTube icons. So I see BTC for plebs, excited for Noster Native. Christopher David, audio is good all around, thanks, including Max.
Yeah.
Who's always the problem child is.
But what, how do we, so if we want people to let us know what they're liking, not liking, what they want to hear about, questions. So what's.
I think we should be pushing them to Zap.stream in the future.
But what about like right now?
But today probably YouTube. Probably hit the Presidio Bitcoin YouTube channel. You can go on Google if you don't have access to the channel right now. Go on Google, type Presidio Bitcoin YouTube. It'll be the first link. Click on that and you should see a live video going right now. Click on that and you should be able to chat. And I think that's how we're seeing all of these chats.
Do we see comments from X too? This may be a question for Alex.
I think Restream is set up so that it will show the comments, but I don't know if it
comes through. So go to YouTube. If you're watching this and you want to ask us a question or say something.
Or just join in the chat. Like we're sort of here hanging out, having fun with each other, but like chime in, you know?
Bring a cup of tea.
Bring a cup of tea, yeah.
God damn.
All right. We'll see if another chat comes in, if anyone's actually listening.
Yeah. You were talking about mining though. I wanted to ask about Proto. Proto is this new chip that decouples mining from the rig, right? Like it's an open source design that I think Not Spiral itself, but Block created. Is that right?
Yep.
And it allows kind of a lot more innovation in the structure of mining because it decouples the chip from the rig, right? And the kind of canonical example I think people always use is like, oh, you can heat a hot tub. And so I'm wondering, is that like the likely best and is that the most likely one, or will that create other opportunities around, like if you want to get that 1 acre in West Texas, does the existence of the Proto chip help in some ways?
I mean, is the hot tub the best application of this?
Well, yeah, like I don't know that I want to.
Are you thinking about
have
the PBJ?
A lot of hot tubs in West Texas. I don't know.
So I think I'm super excited about this chip. I mean, developing a chip is a lengthy and expensive endeavor. For those not familiar with the Bitcoin space, Bitmain has been dominant with mining chips for 10 years. 10 or 11 years, and no one's really supplanted them. There's a couple of competitors, but Bitmain still dominates. And
did they just get far ahead? They can just perform better than
the one thing they do. The one thing they do well is they create the highest performance chips, and no one's really unseated them from that. They do many other things not very well, but
they win at that, and that's they basically win at that, an ASIC design.
And
thing.
It's a yep.
It's not a manufacturing process, because manufacturing is relatively sorted around ASICs, I assume.
It's ASIC design, but you also then need access to foundries of the latest and greatest, you know, like three nanometer node mm-hmm. technology. And there's only two foundries that have that capacity today.
What's the other besides TSMC?
Samsung.
Oh.
So they've been dominant, and that's very bad for Bitcoin for a number of reasons. You don't want one company dominating such an essential part of the ecosystem. There's also geopolitical risk. The top two companies are both Chinese, so it's a risk if
the top two ASIC design companies.
Yeah, sorry. So there's risk if like the Chinese government changes regulations, laws, or uses that as a threat, or like we've seen recently, the United States doesn't allow. They've been stopping imports of Bitmain equipment at the border. So if you're an American business trying to deploy this equipment and you just paid hundreds of millions of dollars for it, and then you don't even get it, that's kind of a.
Is that just like general China tariff import stuff, or is that something?
I don't know if we know
targeted.
The exact details, but Bitmain also works on AI chips, and they may or may not have gone afoul of U.S. policy or laws or so anyway, it's healthier from a Bitcoin perspective. It's healthier to have more chip designers, more manufacturers, geographic diversification. So that's one thing. By having Block enter, it's a big win in that front. Now there's other, like I think Brains recently, a long time small mining vendor, but they've done a lot of good work. They've recently announced they've designed a chip as well. Hmm. So
when you say mining vendor, they were just doing rigs before, and now they're doing chips, or they've been doing.
No, they created firmware. They reverse engineered, because the Bitmain chips are not very open. They had to reverse engineer how they worked. They then produced firmware that was a better firmware. It allowed miners to optimize their operations better, and so they
sold it to a lot of miners and actually get a revenue stream off of that. So that,
and they were custom firmware, but not, they were using Bitmain ASICs with their own custom firmware.
Yeah, and what's miner? Mm-hmm. But they're selling firmware. They do two things. They sell firmware and they also bought Slush Pool. So they've renamed Slush Pool was the first mining pool. They renamed it to Brains Pool, so they have Brains Pool as well. Although that's evolved to, it's basically Bitmain's pool now. So that's a kind of a separate story, but that's their history. They certainly did a lot of good work on the firmware. And they just recently announced a new chip as well. So Blockstream also has announced a chip in the past. I don't really know where that's at. And there's a number of other efforts. So the more efforts, the better, but it is a massive amount of time and expense to produce something, and then to produce something competitive is even harder. And to, you know, to compete with Bitmain on performance. But you mentioned another reason that I like Block's approach is that Block's intending to not just sell a rig. So Bitmain, you can't buy the chip from Bitmain. What's Miner? You can't buy their chip. You can only buy their rig. It's all vertically integrated. And I think there are a lot of new applications that miners want to do, but they're not able to because they can't buy the chips. So like what we've seen some startups try to like create a home mining rig, and they have done it, but they have to like buy Bitmain rigs, tear the thing down, total cherry rigging. It's not what they want. Like they have an industrial design in mind. They have a mechanical design in mind. They have electrical design, a cooling design. But they can't do it because they can't buy the individual.
Is this parts. Stuff like a BitX? Would that be an example where they rip it apart?
FutureBit and BitX and Apollo, and we have several of them here. At Presidio Bitcoin. So one application sure is hot tubs, but I mean more generally like heating water, so swimming pools. But I mean the holy grail is not West Texas, a plot of land, but is home mining at your home, right? I mean, imagine hundreds of millions of people around the world able to just mine from their home, do it economically, and they get no KYC Bitcoin as earnings. I mean, that's so cool. That's amazing for the individual and the overall system.
One idea that would just blow everything open is if you could actually take the mining chip, put it in the inverter with your solar panels. So if every home ends up getting solar and just, you don't even know what Bitcoin is, you don't really care what Bitcoin is, but you're just like, as a side effect of getting this, stacking KYC free Bitcoin, seems like something maybe like a Tesla could do, but maybe with you guys doing this now, maybe this is something that Block could, in partnership with others, do. My biggest question on that is, to your point, Steve, today, we may be several years away from that. That would only work with super depreciated miners or chips. I'm assuming y'all are doing the absolute sort of latest and greatest. Would you have the ability to do like cheaper, less efficient chips as well? That doesn't make sense. This would just be like next gen.
That's been my input to the team. So I agree with you. But it's also, I think, a long-term vision. But I mean, like, One suggestion I had is like when designing the hardware and the rig, make it easy to refurbish in the future.
Yes.
Because the future I see is like you'll launch a chip and a rig that is like the latest and greatest performance. The big industrial mining farms will purchase that. But then 4 years later, it's no longer economically viable. But if you designed everything so it's easily, you can unplug the parts, resell them later, or you know, reconfigure them into a home miner.
Yeah.
If it's been designed with that in mind, it's going to be way cheaper, more environmentally friendly. Like, you know, so that, you know, how much that's been done, I don't know. But like, I do think it's a great idea.
And with the proto design, my understanding is building this sort of like open source ecosystem around it so you can use a lot of applications is a big goal of this. What, remind me again, what is actually being open source? I'm assuming the chip design is not being open sourced.
So starting with just the basics, like the data sheet for the chip of Bitmain is not even available. I mentioned Brains had to reverse engineer because there's no data sheet. So there'll be a data sheet available.
Okay. The data sheet is mostly telling inputs, outputs, like connectivity, wires, like what's the...
Well, like, I mean, just imagine if you're writing an operating system for a CPU, you need to know about like the registers and the memory and stuff like that to write your operating system.
Okay, so kind of everything about the architecture.
For when you're writing firmware for this chip, you need to understand all the different, you know, registers and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so that'll be available. As much as Block and open source will be available, but it's unlikely everything because
there's things outside of loss control. When you're doing, no, that's not it.
That? Okay.
No. There's just things outside of loss control. When you're manufacturing hardware, there are libraries and components that are owned by the foundry that are closed source in their intellectual property. Block can't just steal that and open source it.
It could, but then they end up in a giant lawsuit.
So the things within Block's control will be open.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah,
very badass.
So then the thing is open. Do you expect that would other people decide to take that design and try to do their own, or would it make sense? Can somebody else do this better? Like, what is open buying in the case of?
I don't know. I think the most important thing is selling the chip independently.
Yeah,
and then making the data sheet available. I think that those to me, I clearly see how that will benefit the overall ecosystem and really turn it into a platform.
Yes.
The open sourcing of the hardware, I mean, better to do it than not do it. Maybe people can double check the work, but the reality is if a competitor or someone else who thinks they can do it better, they'll take it and make it better. Okay. But you still have to get foundry access.
Yeah.
And that's a huge centralizing factor as well. You don't just go to a website and click a button to get TSMC foundry space.
I was actually shocked. That was the thing when you told me this, whatever, 6 months ago or whenever it was, when we discussed on one of our early shows. I had no idea Block had that relationship and with TSMC.
Well, I don't know if it's public that Block has a TSMC, but it's either Samsung or TSMC because that's the only 2 3-nanometer foundries. But I mean, Block's made hardware since day one.
Yeah.
So they've had relationship of foundries. And I think the big key device is manufactured elsewhere. So Block has relationships with many different foundries. But it's very different than if you're a Bitcoin startup who has no prior experience, or if you're a big software tech giant.
Yeah.
It's a very different world.
And it makes me much more bullish on Block, actually, because to our point earlier, if the software of everything becomes monetized, hardware is a really interesting place to invest, and y'all are in a good spot there. One thing, I think we should get the chat because there's some good questions and thoughts in here. But one idea to throw out at you, Steve, I love this idea of turning mining into a platform. Maybe, I don't know when this would make sense, but another hackathon, Presidio Bitcoin, entrepreneurs, now that you have this open mining ecosystem, what can you do? Well, now you can start doing things like, building or at least showing demos of the hot tub heater, but also... I actually one piece of software that I think is going to be very, very important. There's some companies that have tried this, sort of grid management, but you could do this at the home level. I think the fundamental question, one of the most important questions in the world for an entrepreneur to solve in 10 years, I have an electron. What do I do with it? Do I use it to light my home? Do I sell it to my neighbor? Do I sell it to the grid? Do I mine Bitcoin? Do I send it to a compute farm? That's a huge question, and now you can start to play with some of that.
Yep. I think Stephen DeLorme just sent me something about a mining hackathon. I'm actually forgetting the details, but I know he's working on that.
Cool.
Is he a miner?
He's
a designer, though.
Yeah, he's a Spiral grantee alum, and he's a designer at Voltage. But he does a lot of open source work. He also runs the physical space in Atlanta, I think it's BitLab in Atlanta. I forget what the venue is or timing for the hackathon, but I know he's doing that. So I think we'll learn a lot from that.
That's cool. So I think we should go and I don't know if it's possible to
scroll up a little bit, maybe
that first thing. So Christopher dropped a few things in the chat around MCP servers. For those of you who don't know the MCP, this was a protocol put out by Anthropic and recently embraced yesterday by OpenAI, but it's just a way to list a service or a data source and have various AI agents or models like Claude be able to use it. So Christopher says, version 2 of the MCP spec was released 2 days ago, adding auth support, enabling remote MCP servers to now run in the cloud instead of just on a local developer's computer. OpenAI embraced it, et cetera. BitConsensus is now an MCP, which still misses payments and discoverability, which all of us can help solve via Lightning and Nostra. MCP should be a focus of the hackathon. That's a great point. Something that we've talked about in the past, there's also people working in bridges with DVMs, data vending machines on Nostr and MCPs. But I 100% agree. There's, again, to this point we made earlier, there's a moment, there's a technological disruption happening. We know MCP servers, at least for the short term, have the mindshare of developers, and there's no way to find them or to pay to use them. So that seems like a huge opportunity. And I think, Alex, if you scroll down one more, Renee, who works at Albi, says that, let's go, we're working on an MCP server for NWC for Nostra Wallet Connect here. So that's awesome. And
we were looking at, I was, you know, when I was working with D this week and Max, we were looking at MCPs because we were like, oh, are there good Lightning MCPs out there? And we looked, started with Awesome MCP, which is kind of a directory of good MCPs, has a GitHub that then links to a website. And we went on the website and searched for Lightning. We found Albi has some, I don't know if it's just a rudimentary, but Albi has like the Lightning MCP server that we were able to find so far.
Sick.
So, and MCPs, in case people aren't following as closely, MCPs are like the servers that give like an LLM access to services. So if you wanted to have an MCP to run a Lightning service, it enables the, you know, your LLM to be able to access the services of like a Lightning node. Yeah, if you build that in the MCP.
Well, and critically, you could have other kinds of MCPs. And so one example here that I think is extremely interesting, and I actually think this will probably get built because I know they're big Lightning and Nostra fans, is Coggy. Coggy Search, which we've talked about, independent search, paid search. You know, their only way to pay today is, you know, you buy a subscription, you buy credits. But potentially they have an MCP server, right? So you could imagine, you know, it's not running a Lightning node or anything like that, but they just want a way to get paid, where if a bot says, hey, I need to use your search engine and it costs whatever, a quarter of a penny, you know, whatever, 10 sats, 10 Bitcoin, as you guys would say, then they can do that. And I think that, the payments for MCP is huge. I also think discoverability is massive. Where the hell do you find these? I mean, you were looking for the source. Awesome MCP is great, but like there should be like a standard of how do I discover these? Nostr seems like an interesting thing to use there.
Yeah, we've been talking about how Nostr, you know, it has this social media use case. It's like a water cooler and we gather around and there's 40,000 weekly actives or whatever. But one of the points we were discussing yesterday, which I think is really what I get excited about is it's just like a public broadcast messaging infrastructure.
And identity system.
Yeah. And if you can use it as such and think about it as such and don't get too anchored on, you know, yes, it has this kind of social media use case, but like, let's imagine the thousands of things that could be built with an open public messaging system. I was actually, one of the visitors I had into Pursuit of Bitcoin this week was this kind of a traditional venture capitalist who, you know, he's like, he's into Bitcoin. He doesn't really do a lot of investments in that, but he'd never even heard of Nostr. And so I ended up explaining to him what it is and how it works. And he's like, wow. He's like, yes, this seems like something that would be needed if this works like this. So he's like, he's tuned into the fact that this kind of thing would be useful, even though we don't really have necessarily a huge diversity of applications. But I think we have to like get those, you know, whether it's SDKs or MCP servers, or make it easy so you can think about somebody was talking about the workout app that they were comparing workouts or posting. Maybe that was the BJJ thing, but where you don't have to think about Nostr and you can just like use it and it's kind of like the default, like the LLMs choose it because it's like what everybody uses and it's just easy. You don't have to think about it. And I think it's actually like not, like, I don't think it's an intractable problem. So Carnage, I was talking to Carnage on Nostr the other day, actually yesterday after our session, because he was talking about how like, oh, like probably just need like lots of examples and like, you know, lots of code examples. And then eventually the LLMs will train and figure out that this is workable. But I don't think you have to wait because that's like kind of diffuse. It's not very actionable. I think you can actually just like the kind of stuff that Max Fang is doing with Lexi. He just has to like decide we want to make it work and we want to make the use case work and then get that into people's hands. So it's not this crazy diffuse problem. It's actually a very focused problem. You just need like one person who cares about it, understands it well enough and can push it forward. So I'm excited about that for Lightning, but I think I'm like newly realizing that Nostr has similar challenges that you can't really do things with it so easily. So positive blue two, right? Is Jordy.
Yeah.
just before we got on here, when we were sort of, I don't know if it was tweeting or Nostring or whatever, but he said he's setting up where he can take Lightning payments with Replit Agent. And he's going to do like a 5-minute video or something, he said. So I think we're going to have these tools ready to go like soon. We've got like some momentum of building around people focusing on this. So I think we got to get it for Nostr. It's like feels parallel to me to the Lightning stuff.
Yeah. I would love anyone that's interested in all the stuff we're doing with the hackathon. We need vibe coding ready to go with Lightning Payments, Nostr Wallet Connect, and Nostr.
Yeah.
Everyone's been put on notice.
You heard it here first.
Cool. So anything else on the, I know we dabble in mining from time to time. We talked a lot of proto mining stuff. Anything else that we should be looking for in kind of the mining space or anything proto specific, or is that open up too many other lines of thought?
Yeah, nothing that really like is short and sweet. But I think that'll be an ongoing topic. It's the heart. I mean, mining's the heartbeat of Bitcoin. So, and I'd say it's one of the, we don't really talk about risk factors to Bitcoin in the show, but I'd say like, I have it up there on probably a top three list of risks to Bitcoin as well. Long-term risks.
And you just mean like mining consolidation, like too much hash rate in one.
Yes. Whether it be centralization across a number of dimensions. I mean, we spoke briefly about Foundry, you know, not that many foundries, but, on a previous show, we talked about FPPS, like the sort of the economics of mining and pooling liquidity there. And that's why Bitmain has somewhere between 40 to 50% of the hash rate right now that they're controlling, which transactions get to go into blocks, and they custody the Bitcoin reward from those blocks, for others. So that's that's alarming. But yeah, I'd say that, that's like a top three risk in my mind.
What are the other?
Yeah, what are the other two?
I don't know. The only other one is, that I would name off the top of my head is just around custodial. Like everyone puts their Bitcoin in BlackRock ETF.
Oh, that was
which gets
one.
To a big theme and we talk a lot on this show about using Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Be it payments or AI or lava loans or whatever. All of those, none of those are popular yet. We're excited about all of them. When they do happen, it like dramatically reduces this risk. But if we go another 10, 15, 20 years where all Bitcoin is store of value, and that's what the vast majority of humans think of it as, use it as, which is a completely legitimate use case, and one that I think it's a given to us. It's that. Of course it's valuable and great for that. But if that's all it is 10, 15, 20 years from now for most people, the benefits of like an ETF for most people are immense. And then there's massive centralization of custody. Then all of a sudden Bitcoin becomes very fragile because this story we've all been sold, which it can't change, it can change. Go read the BCAP paper, right? Bitcoin Consensus Analysis Project. Of course it can change. It's software, but what keeps it intact? And if all the coins are held by one person, then
Coinbase.
Yeah. So, that's probably my number one. I haven't given it a lot of thought about like how I'd actually rank them, but those two would be like in my top three probably.
For the centralization, we talked about that early on in the show. How has your vibe changed on that? Do you think, I mean, obviously Coinbase still is the custodian for like almost all the ETFs for MicroStrategy, I believe. I'm not sure on that. Like, do you think we're, do you feel roughly the same you did in November, December? Do you feel like we're getting better?
Sorry, in terms of custodial, custodying Bitcoin?
The risk of too much Bitcoin just being stored by a few custodians at max.
It's hard to measure change in like 4 months or 6 months for this type of stuff. So I'd probably say it hasn't changed much. For both of these risk areas, I'm actually an optimist. I just point, if I'm asked like where does Bitcoin, we know Bitcoin has failed in year 2045. Why? Right. And well, those would be two big reasons as to why. But I remain quite optimistic we'll resolve that, but it really, I do think it hinges greatly on making Bitcoin usable for things beyond store of value, which is probably why we talk about it a lot on the show.
I'm glad we talked about it, because one thing I was going to say is a win, because we talk about it so much, it's very top of mind and I have good arguments for it. So when that gentleman came in here and he's like, I like Bitcoin, but like, I get why nobody pays, that's fine. I was like, well, no, it's not fine. And we actually went down a path of, 5 or 10 minutes talking about it. And he came to the other end of it like, oh, yeah, okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah,
that's good. I also should point out,
We can't say, oh, Bitcoin needs to be used to save Bitcoin. Period. That makes no sense.
It needs to deliver value
to human beings.
100%. 100%.
Not necessarily. So, it needs to deliver value to someone.
Or
to agents.
Or to, very good point. It has to deliver value, period. And then if it does, obviously, it will be used. And then it makes Bitcoin way more resilient. So that's why, and I think we do a good job of it, but we need to be critical. Like, it's easy to, you get very passionate about Bitcoin and it's like, oh, of course I want to spend in Bitcoin because I love Bitcoin. It's like, well, but most people aren't like in love with it.
Yeah, yeah.
and that's not going to save the day.
Or AI. AI is going to be emotionless, right? AI is just going to be like, job to be done. What is my job to be done? Is this the best tool? Yes. Awesome.
I actually think, hearing you say all that is making me even more bullish on the AI use case, particularly with the AIs running mints or custing the Bitcoin for us. Because if we get the AIs using the tools first, they're going to have to build their own banks, which is very organic. And I could see that's the kind of thing. A lot of the sort of old world stuff, you know, everyone uses Coinbase because that's the safe, you know, choice. It's like, it's already kind of been de-risked for other financial institutions. Like that kind of like, making a shift there requires a ton of either, you know, doing a lot of compliance work, shifting public opinion, that's slow. But if you build an entire alternative ecosystem of agents using Bitcoin, building out their own banks, that can like go from zero to like whatever, something, some really large number fast. So AI banks, let's go.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we are at the end of our time. Yeah, right on the money. So let's call it a...
Oh, and last comment, thanks to XAZ or AZ from X.
Alex.
Turns out...
Well, still, thanks to our producer, Alex.
Alex does such a great job. Yeah. And Alex really did all the work in helping us reconfigure this and figure out how to wire everything together. It's been quite a process because none of us really know what we're doing.
It's not easy.
You can't vibe code this stuff. You actually have to like plug it in and make it work.
Oh, give it a couple weeks. Alex will be vibe coding soon.
So thanks to Alex. Shout out for all the great work producing this.
All right. Another good show.
All right.
Good show, guys. Good job, guys.
Wrap it.